All right, our final case this morning is number 19-14664, Safeco Insurance Company versus Endurance American Specialty Insurance Company. And Mr. Rosen, we will start with you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, Jonathan Rosen on behalf of Appellant Safeco. This is an appeal that presents a dispositive issue of pure law. That is, whether Safeco owed a duty to indemnify Comegys, Endurance's insured, for a third-party claim brought against Comegys, alleging that Comegys failed to procure adequate and appropriate insurance for its customer, its client, Mr. Smith.
The Mr. answer- Rosen, can I ask you one question, and then I'll let you get on to the rest of your argument?
Sure.
Are your first three contentions on appeal essentially the same one? In other words, that the agreement, I mean, you phrase them differently, but do those first three arguments all come down to the claim that the agreement did not require Safeco to indemnify Comegys under these circumstances?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. It's three different really ways to reason out that the plain language of the indemnity agreement does not require Safeco to indemnify for a claim alleging Comegys' own negligence or own wrongful conduct.
Okay. Go ahead.
And so what I was going to say is the answer to the dispositive issue, the issue of pure law, turns on two undisputed critical facts. And the first critical fact is the nature of the claim asserted against Comegys. Endurance argues it's the master of its own claims, but Endurance is not the master of the third-party claim that it paid to settle that was brought against Comegys. You can't seek third-party indemnity and completely ignore the substance or the allegations of the third-party claim for which you seek indemnity.
Tell me briefly how you would describe under Florida law first-party indemnity and third-party indemnity and how they differ.
Sure. Well, third-party indemnity, I think, is the most common. It's the clearest and easiest to understand. It's indemnification for a claim brought by a third party, a non-party to the agreement. And that's precisely what we have here. I don't think there's any dispute that Endurance's claim is for third-party indemnity. The confusion comes because Endurance completely ignores the substance of the third-party claim and wants to focus entirely on alleged acts and omissions by Safeco that led to the third-party claim being brought. First-party indemnity is harm caused directly by the other party to the agreement. You don't have a third-party claim, such as a lawsuit, that triggers the duty to indemnify. Here, the plain language of the indemnity agreement calls only for third-party indemnification. It's conditioned upon notice of a third-party claim. And again, I don't think there's any real dispute that the issue for the court is one of third-party indemnity. The confusion really comes from Endurance's position in the lawsuit, which ignores the substance of the third-party claim and focuses entirely on, you know, a settlement agreement and an assignment of that claim that then led to that claim being made. But the claim itself does not implicate Safeco's acts and omissions. The claim is that Comegys didn't communicate effectively with its insured, failed to inquire about the availability, what the insured's, Mr. Smith's assets were, and didn't procure appropriate insurance for the insured. That's a negligence claim. It's a breach of fiduciary duty claim. It doesn't implicate Safeco at all. There's no even inference that Safeco had anything to do with those particular allegations that led to Mr. Smith being underinsured, grossly underinsured.
So can I ask you, this is Judge Newsom, can I ask you a quick question? I'm hardly an insurance law expert, so I'm sort of learning on the fly here. But so do I understand in your position to be sort of twofold? One, that to the extent that the claim sort of pre-existed the alleged misconduct of Safeco, that it doesn't fit within the indemnity agreement between you and Endurance, or rather you and Comegys, because you don't indemnify against Comegys' own misconduct. And secondly, that to the extent that the claim instead is that Safeco sort of was in cahoots and served to sort of like sort of drum up this claim, then it is in effect a first party indemnity claim for which the contract doesn't provide and a different contract would have to specify. Is that, do I have that basically right?
I think that is basically correct, Your Honor. And it's not even necessarily the chronology of the claim, although that is an interesting point, I think, that we didn't really address in our brief, that the claim against Comegys predates any of the alleged conduct by Safeco. But under all of the Florida cases determining whether or not there's a duty to indemnify, the courts look at the allegations of the claim. It doesn't matter whether it's meritorious or not. And one of the key components to Endurance's claim is that the claim against Comegys was trumped up. It was a bogus claim. You can pick your adjective or your colorful language, but that doesn't matter under Florida law. It matters what the character, the substance, the nature of the claim is. And the claim against Comegys is for Comegys' own conduct. And the reason the first party indemnity issue is even an issue is because Endurance chooses to ignore that claim and wants to focus entirely on this settlement agreement and this assignment of the claim and the arbitration of damages. And really all Safeco did was give the green light for its insurer to proceed with a settlement agreement that would protect its own insured from an excess judgment. And that has nothing to do with the claim itself that was asserted against Comegys. Does that answer your question, Ron?
Yeah, that's helpful. And just one follow-up of what relevance is the fact that the fraud claims here were rejected, or the fraud claims sort of part and parcel with this sort of like this scheme or this plan that Safeco is alleged to have hatched to sort of drum up this claim? And if so, how does the rejection of the fraud claims kind of play in?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I think there certainly is overlap between the conduct that Endurance contends supports its breach of contract claim and the conduct that supports the tort claims that the jury found Safeco was not liable. And in fact, it is the same conduct. And I think that the only conceivable claim that Endurance might have for Safeco's participation in the settlement agreement and consent to the settlement agreement going forward would be some kind of tort claim. We don't think it's a meritorious claim, and we think the jury found it. But the contract claim is clearly not supported by the two most basic undisputed facts, which is the claim that was asserted against Comegys and the plain language of the indemnity provision. You don't have to go any further to see this claim should never have been submitted to the jury. The only ambiguity that Endurance identifies is not a material ambiguity, because they talk about whether or not the indemnity provision provides support for claims that are either limited to the placement of business or go beyond that. Even if you construe it more broadly, under the long line of Florida cases, there's clearly no unequivocal intent to indemnify the indemnity Comegys for its own wrongful acts here. So, the other point I want to make is that Endurance presented no competent evidence of the party's intent. Even if you buy their argument that there is a material ambiguity here, the only party who testified was Linda Brissett, the president of Comegys. She testified, A, she didn't know what the indemnity provision meant. She also testified that the first time she ever read the agreement was after the claim had been made. And that's irrelevant to the party's intent at contract formation. That's the critical period. Obviously, once there's a claim that's been made, the party's testimony about the meaning of the contract conveniently gets tailored to the party's litigation position. So there is no evidence to support or resolve the very ambiguity that Endurance identified. So that's another critical point. And I mean, the list of Florida cases, one other argument they make is that the indemnity provision has a rising out of language, which is broad language under the Torres case that should be construed to encompass this kind of conduct by Safeco. And the problem with that is, I think at least five of the cases we cite in our brief, including the two Florida Supreme Court cases, the indemnity provisions have a rising out of language. And a rising out of is still broad language, but it's general language. And it's not language that supports an unequivocal duty to indemnify the indemnity for its own wrongful acts. And that's the Charles Poe Masonry case and the Cox Cable case. And again, even if you buy that Safeco's conduct somehow is intertwined with Kamaji's alleged misconduct or wrongful acts. Under the Florida case law, even when there's joint liability, in other words, allegations that both the indemnitor and the indemnity acted together and are both negligent and caused the damages, you still need that unequivocal expression of intent to indemnify.
Counsel, 2 minute warning.
Thank you. You still need that unequivocal expression in the indemnity provision of intent to indemnify the indemnity for its own wrongful acts. And that is absent here. Other points is Endurance's own corporate representative testified that the only provision of the contract Endurance contends was breached was the indemnity provision. And for that reason, the implied covenant claim fails as a matter of law, because under Florida law, you can't have a breach of an implied covenant without a breach of an express obligation or provision of the contract. Because there can't be any breach of the indemnity provision, there can't be any breach of any implied duties as well. And Your Honors, unless anyone else has any questions for me, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you. Valerie, you can add 1 minute of rebuttal time for Mr. Rosen. Okay, Mr. Kaplan, we're ready for you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please, the court, Jim Kaplan on behalf of the Appellee Endurance. This morning's proceedings represent Safeco's fifth attempt to dissuade a court to spare it from the consequences of its actions. Make no mistake, we didn't file the case to ask the court to have Safeco indemnify us for Kamaji's actions. That was never the case. This is an attempt by the appellant to spin or shift the theories of the case that were clear from the beginning, that were manifest throughout, and which the district court had no difficulty understanding, neither, by the way, did the jury.
So, Mr. Kaplan, can I ask you, just this is Judge Newsom, just a quick question, and I'll ask you basically the same question I asked Mr. Rosen. Do I have your position basically right? If you say this isn't an effort to get Safeco to indemnify Kamaji's for Kamaji's own failure, it must be an effort to get Safeco to indemnify Kamaji's for something Safeco did wrong. And the thing that you said Safeco did wrong is by sort of engaging in this scheme to sort of cook up the breach of fiduciary duty action. Is that basically right?
That is exactly right.
Okay, so then let me ask you this. If that's right, number one, did the breach of fiduciary duty claim pre-exist in time Safeco's alleged misconduct?
No.
Okay, talk to me about that.
What the record showed, and the facts largely undisputed, is that in late June, there was an automobile accident that later proved fatal. Safeco knew within days that its policy limits were going to be insufficient, knew as well that its insured had substantial personal assets and therefore no affidavit of financial responsibility would be provided by the insured because they didn't want to reveal it. At that point, even before any claim was even, any lawsuit was even filed against the insured, Safeco controlled the defense. Its hired defense counsel went out and recruited a bad faith lawyer to join the estate's legal team to design and build the claim against Kamaji's. Not a finger was lifted to execute on that plan until Safeco signed on, until Safeco agreed to waive post-loss conditions and allow its insured to get into bed and cooperate with the plaintiff.
All right, so let me ask you just two other follow-on questions, and then I'll let my co-panelists ask their questions. So, and I'll just ask them in succession, and you can answer them as you see fit. One, of what relevance is it, as I asked Mr. Rosen, that the jury rejected the fraud claims, which I take to have substantial overlap with this allegation that Safeco was involved in a scheme or a plan to cook up a bogus claim? And two, what about the fact that, as Mr. Rosen explained it anyway, and you're an insurance lawyer, so you can explain differently if you'd like, but that in effect, what you're asking for is a first party indemnity claim and not a third party indemnity claim. And Florida law seems to say, if you want to do first party indemnity, you've got to be pretty doggone clear about it.
I'll answer both questions in the order in which you asked. First is the relevance of the fraud count. This was not an ordinary fraud count. This was a count for fraud on the court. The jury's consideration of those issues was necessarily tied up by the instructions they were given. The instructions went unchallenged. And so because the jury followed the instructions, they were able to resolve the fraud count against my client, but that does not impinge in any way the correctness of their verdict as to the two contract counts. The second question had to do with this first party, third party. Frankly, the lingo can get a little confusing. To me, the issue is, as Safeco sometimes phrases it, whether the contract provides Comegys for indemnity against its own negligence. It does not. And that's not what we said. What we said was Safeco wrote an extremely broad contract, voluntarily including the words arising out of, which under Florida law is extremely broad, and agreed to indemnify my client for any claims arising out of any actual or alleged negligent or intentional conduct on the company's part. That's exactly what happened here. And so far as the case law is concerned,
here's my difficulty, and you can help me. This may be, you know, insurance law 101, and I'm sorry if I'm just not understanding, but I guess what you're saying is that Safeco has to indemnify Comegys under the agreement for Safeco's actions or misconduct toward Comegys. And that I take to be a first party claim instead of a third party claim, which would be that Safeco has to indemnify Comegys for its actions vis-a-vis a third party that leaves Comegys on the hook. And I mean, as I read Florida law says, I'm looking at a case called MVW Management versus Regalia, and it says for indemnity to apply against first party claims, the indemnification provision must clearly indicate that it applies to the acts of the other party to the contract.
The Florida law here and first party, third party, these labels, I think, can be confusing. The case law here, particularly the Coe case, which was discussed extensively in Appellant's brief, all makes clear that what's determinative is the actual language of the indemnity agreement. Here, there was no lawsuit filed against Comegys ever. And so all you have is a self-serving letter written by Safeco's defense counsel laying accusations. It would be beyond inequitable to hold that Comegys, and by extension Endurance, was bound up by that letter simply because of counsel's choice of words, when the evidence that the jury sat for 6 days and listened to clearly established what actually happened.
But I don't know if this is what Judge Newsom is trying to get at, but is your claim, under your understanding and framing of it, a first party indemnity claim against Safeco?
Michael.
No matter how you style it, whether it's for Safeco's own conduct or whatever, it's a first party indemnity claim, right? Or am I missing something?
It is a claim for Safeco's negligent, or actually, as the jury found, intentional conduct in breaching its contract, refusing to indemnify, participating in a scheme to basically throw Comegys under the bus.
But that's a first, you're not seeking a breach of contract action. It's an indemnity claim. So it's a first party indemnity claim, right? Because both Safeco and Comegys are party to the indemnification agreement.
And Safeco's failure to indemnify when requested to do so breached the contract. And Safeco's conduct in creating the situation in the first place and then failing to indemnify constituted a valid claim for breach of the implied covenant, as the jury found and as the court sustained and succinctly stated in denying the Rule 50B relief.
Mr. Kaplan.
Your Honor.
Is your claim against Safeco a common law claim that is outside the contractual bargain between Comegys and Safeco?
No, Your Honor.
It is not? As I see it, well, they had a contractual relationship, but as I see it, you're alleging that Safeco engaged in conduct which would be tortious toward Comegys. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So Safeco and Comegys had a relationship, an agent insurance company relationship. And Safeco, in a given case, it happened that it came out of this relationship, but it wasn't part of it. In a given case, they engaged in tortious conduct with the estate and so forth and the insured, and in effect injured Comegys.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's got nothing to do with the indemnity agreement at all. They're liable under Florida law. Under Florida law for a tort. And the tort was contrary to Comegys' interests in engaging this settlement and negotiation. So just a plain independent tort.
That would be one way to look at it. The facts are exactly as Your Honor stated. That is the case. Well, that was tried to the jury.
Okay. That may well be what was tried to the jury. From an analytical point of view, it has nothing to do with the indemnity agreement as I see it, as I see your claim. It's a plain old tort claim, where the insurance company happened to have this relationship with Comegys and engaged in conduct that breached a fiduciary obligation or whatever, a common law obligation to Comegys.
The conduct by Safeco violated any number of laws.
Can I ask you just a quick question? So just to make sure I'm following along, what claims did you bring? I mean, did you bring a common law indemnity claim or a some kind of broad claim or something?
We did not bring a common law indemnity claim, and that's why I answered Judge Chick's question in the negative when I was asked. We did bring a fraud on the court claim, but not a direct fraud claim because the representations were not made to Comegys. The claims that the jury resolved in the appellee's favor were a breach of contract and a breach of the implied covenant. A breach of the implied covenant clearly goes under Florida law, and I think the law of every jurisdiction, to the reasonable expectations of the parties. Given the relationship, Comegys had every right to believe that its contracting party would not throw it under the bus to save its own skin. And yet that's exactly what happened here. And for that reason, the jury was correctly instructed, and there's been no challenge. That they were completely entitled to find that if the reasonable expectations were frustrated, defeated by Safeco's affirmative conduct, then a remedy would lie, and that's what they did.
how were they saving their own skin? They paid up the policy limits.
Right.
But what else could they have?
Extra contractual damages.
No. With Safeco's only exposure in this case was to defend the insured and to pay the policy limits, which they did right away.
Actually, they didn't do it for more than 30 days.
Well, whatever. The insured might have had a claim against Safeco for bad faith in settling, but that's out. There's no bad faith in settling in this case.
There's no bad faith in failing to settle.
The insured wouldn't have no claim in this case, as I understand the facts, against Safeco for somehow or another not having settled this claim early up.
Actually, they would, and we argued that to the jury extensively. Under opinions from this court and under the Florida Supreme Court opinion in Harvey, failure to tender the primary policy here when Safeco knew that the damages far exceeded it.
Well, then that would be
was in fact an act of actionable bad faith.
All right. Well, that would be the estate's claim on an assignment from the insured to sue for bad faith, but that's not
yes. And instead, they all got together.
That claim, as I understand it, is not before us. The estate's bad faith claim on an assignment of the insured's bad faith claim is not before us, as I understand it.
That's true, but the motivation is what's important.
I understand. We're back to our common law claim.
I see that my time is up.
You want to wrap up? We'll give you 30 seconds to do so, Mr. Kaplan.
I think you correctly understand the issue. Safeco's faithless conduct here created this mess, and a properly instructed jury found that they ought to answer for the damages. Nothing more and nothing less.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Rosen, you've got your rebuttal time left.
Thank you, Judge Jordan. Mr. Kaplan was asked a question about whether endorsing claim was for first party indemnity. It can't possibly be a claim for first party indemnity because Endurance paid a claim brought by a third party. This was the estate's claim. It was assigned by Mr. Smith. Both Mr. Smith and the estate are non-parties to the agreement. And this was a claim paid voluntarily by Endurance for $1.57 million after a demand letter with no litigation. Be that as it may, it's a third party claim. There's no way to turn this into a first party claim. And the first party claim doesn't work either. The indemnity provision doesn't work. Indemnity claim doesn't work, whether it's first party or third party.
I thought you wanted this to be a first party claim because your argument is that the agreement isn't clear enough to allow for that. Now you're suggesting it's a third party claim. To go back to one of the first questions I asked you, I thought that a first party indemnity claim was one against a party to the indemnity agreement. Am I mistaken?
Well, the claim is always going to be brought against a party to the indemnity agreement for failure to indemnify. The question is whether it's a claim based, it's a liability claim because there's a third party that brought a lawsuit or a claim against the other party to the agreement. That's what we have here. My argument was there's no basis for first party indemnity because the plain language of the indemnity provision conditions indemnity upon notice of a third party claim. And Endurance in its briefs concedes that its claim is for third party indemnity. I know the argument today went a little bit differently. Either way, it doesn't work. The first party claim, you're right, I did argue that it doesn't work because of the plain language of the agreement. The third party indemnity claim doesn't work because the claim itself is one for Comegys' own negligence. And we have a long line of cases that says you need a clear and unequivocal expression of an intent to indemnify for the indemnity's own negligence. We clearly don't have that here. There's no dispute about that. There's no even argument about that. There's one factual issue I want to correct. The opposing counsel said that the claim itself was written by Safeco's lawyer. That's just incorrect. The only embodiment of the claim is a November 23rd, 2016 letter by Richard Bocor. He is the attorney for the estate. He's not Safeco's lawyer. He wasn't hired by Safeco. He didn't represent Safeco. Safeco's lawyer was Mr. Smoke. And Mr. Smoke represented Mr. Smith, not Safeco. But Mr. Smoke had nothing to do with this November 23rd, 2016 letter. That was the estate's lawyer, and Endurance admits that's the only embodiment or written expression of the claim. That claim says, Commegees, you breached a duty of reasonable care, you breached a fiduciary duty, you didn't get the appropriate amount of coverage from Mr. Smith, you didn't communicate with him effectively, and you misrepresented the availability of additional insurance. You incorrectly stated you'd have to increase your premiums under your underlying automobile policy, and that was incorrect. All these allegations have nothing to do with Safeco. They're based entirely on Commegees' own wrongful acts, and under Cable Cox Corporation versus Gulf Power, under the Charles Bow Masonry case, and under the long line of Florida cases we cited in our briefs, there's no language in this indemnity provision that would support a duty to indemnify for Commegees' own negligence. And again, you heard opposing counsel's presentation. He never once addressed the issue of the nature of the third-party claim that Endurance paid $1.57 million to settle. He never addresses that. They want third-party indemnity, and they want to ignore the substance and allegations of the third-party claim. That doesn't work. There's no claim for indemnity here, and we ask the court reverse the judgment, finding Safeco liable for breach of contract. I see that I'm out of time, Your Honors. Unless you have any additional questions, we refer you to our briefs for any remaining arguments.
All right, Mr. Kaplan, Mr. Rosen, thank you both very, very much. That's the end of our session today. So we stand in adjournment, and we will get back up and going tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Thank you.